The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. Thank you, James. Off we go then with another huge show on Football Weekly. League Cup final. Shootout drama at Wembley as Man City stick in their big willy and Liverpool blow it. Premier League. Van Gaal gets more academy rewards as Marcus Rashford takes best newcomer and makes the box his office. Chelsea win back-to-back games and are set to sign Conte as manager. Haven't they just got rid of one of those? We look forward to all the midweek action. Plus, we get the big news from Europe. PSG, Italy, Atletico's derby win, and more in this Football Weekly. Hooray, listeners. Bring out your bunting as I unveil to you Barry, Burnton and Bandini.
All the bees.
All the bees. We haven't got Barney, no, but we don't need
some
him.
Of the bees.
Yeah. Hi, Simon. You're right.
I'm okay.
Good. Paolo, you well?
Very good, thanks.
Big Barry?
Yep, good, thanks.
Good. Off we go, then. A lot of football out there. Don't worry, sport. The Guardian's here to give you our verdict. Let's start. Item one, League Cup final. Huzzah for Pellegrini and for the much-maligned Willy Caballero. Is anyone at this game or anything like that in a kind of official capacity?
No, sadly.
But you watched it, yeah?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Bingo.
They often, there's often... freebies at Capital One Cup time, but not this year, I think,
because it was
so demand for tickets was so high. Yeah, but okay. Didn't have this problem when Swansea played Bradford. Right. Someone pointed out to me, but yeah, it was, I enjoyed it. Despite you know, Caballero, it was a lovely story because it was nice that Manuel Pellegrini stuck with him.
Right. Well, I love the tweet that Todd sent you on that very topic. He said, "For once, picking your willy over your heart is the correct decision."
That was good, all right. I mean, and to be fair, I would prefer his chances in a penalty shootout to Joe Hart's. I don't think Joe Hart is very good at penalty shootouts.
Is that right?
Yeah, he often attempts to psych out opposition players. We all remember how Andrea Pirlo made an absolute fool of him. And his attempts to sort of emulate Bruce Grobbelaar in that famous European Cup final, they always seem a bit half-arsed, you know, and other players, I think, sort of inspires confidence in them rather than undermines any confidence they have. But Caballero did brilliantly, and fair play to him. He deserves his big moment in the sun.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that Pirlo chip, because that's almost exactly how this one started, really, with the Upamecano down the middle, and I thought that was clearly what Coutinho had in mind with when he lined up his penalty and took that ridiculous exaggerated step. Caballero had gone early on that first one, and basically after that he refused to go early and he just guessed right three times. I don't know if he guessed right or he knew right, but he made three fantastic saves.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, because they're going to be playing again on Wednesday in the league, although sadly this time there's no chance of a penalty shootout unless there's a rash of kind of really bad challenges at the end of the game in the box, which could happen.
I also thought it was quite strange that Liverpool, their choice of penalty takers and the order in which they took them. Jordan Henderson didn't step up. Daniel Sturridge didn't step up. Why not?
Well, Sturridge had cramp. That was his issue. His legs were a bit sore, so he was out of action. He declared himself out of action, as he does. Although one imagines, given how little football he's actually played, after 120 minutes he might have been authentically knackered. And he was tearful at the end after Liverpool lost. So, I mean, I wouldn't accuse him of faking anything, but it wasn't enormously surprising that he declared himself out.
Yeah. Well, it was a shame for Liverpool, Daniel, Jürgen, but great for Manuel Pellegrini as he begins his swan song with a bit of silverware, and who knows what else might be on the way. As I say, they are going to be visiting Liverpool for another clash with their chums on Wednesday night in the league. Do they get a Europa League spot for winning this, don't they?
Yeah.
They may need one, Paolo. They may do.
Okay.
Others have been getting busy while they've been with their finals at Wembley and stuff. Other teams?
It's possible. I mean, I think you could also argue that City have, between the Kiev game and this one, which, okay, they did have to go to extra time penalties, but they were it took a couple of fantastic saves from Mignolet to get to that point. You know, Aguero on another day would have scored. I think this is going to be a nice little confidence lifter for them going into these last couple of games. I just wanted to add on Caballero that because we were talking about Pellegrini having a trophy, an extra trophy to leave with. It's the first trophy of Caballero's career, which I think plays into that conversation of do you stick with the guy? Well, I think technically he's won things as a substitute before, but this is the first one he's won on the pitch. So at 34 years old, I guess good for Pellegrini for sticking with him because he deserved that.
Pellegrini had the same issue a couple of years ago in the League Cup final against Sunderland when Pantoliman had played. Pretty much, I think there was one game in that run that he hadn't played. And obviously he'd been dropped from the 2013 FA Cup final by Mancini. But Pellegrini stuck with him then. And so this is obviously his... it was no surprise when he stuck with Caballero based on the knowledge of the 2014 final. And then he said afterwards, Pellegrini, I don't know about you, but my word is more important than football.
He said he would rather, if City had lost without Caballero, than win. I'm tremendously confused.
The quote that I saw is he said, I would rather lose the final than lose my word.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, well...
Well, there aren't...
Clearly no place for him in the Premier League. Off he goes.
We'll be better off without him.
Right, okay. What do you reckon on Liverpool's chances of getting revenge this Wednesday, Simon?
It depends, on whether they have to play... Lucas and Touré in central defence again. You would really worry with those two against. I mean, Aguero kept on darting in behind them at Wembley, and you would worry again if those two are playing again on Wednesday. And of course, Manchester City will be able to choose their first choice goalkeeper.
Wow.
I'm curious actually to know what people made of Lucas's performance at centre half, because I read Michael Cox wrote a good article today in which he was fairly critical of him, not didn't exorciate him or anything, but was fairly critical, whereas Paul McGrath, who I would say was possibly the best centre half ever in the game, or certainly in top 10, tweeted to the effect that Lucas was making the job look incredibly easy. So I thought he did well. I didn't think he was as good as McGrath.
He had a pretty good game, generally. And with the ball in front of him, he controlled the situation well. But he just, he lacks pace, is not so good on the turn. There's issues behind.
Oh, well, zonal marking dot whatever, as Owen Coyle famously dubbed it. Mm.
But before we finish talking about that game.
Yes.
Yaya Touré.
Yes.
Did you see the picture from the dressing room?
No.
There was a picture of all the City players in the dressing room with the cup, and they were all in a big crowd.
Yeah, and he's in his towel. Is that the one?
He is sitting a couple of yards away, drinking a cup of tea and looking the other direction. Mm. All the rest of the squad are having their celebratory dressing room photo.
Right.
And there's Yaya Touré, like, I'm not interested. Which is pretty much, he scored the winning penalty.
Was there any cake with the tea?
Perhaps that was the issue. He's got the winning penalty, and he was like, right, I'm the man. And he runs off to celebrate as if he'd just delivered the trophy single-handedly. Right. And everyone else goes and celebrates with the guy who's just saved three penalties.
Mm. Do you know what he was probably sat there thinking? If only my teammates were as good as me, then we'd be top of the league.
That probably is what he's thinking.
Mm. All right. Liverpool fans, by the way, here's a special message for you from producer Ben. If you're feeling a bit down in the dumps about Sunday afternoon, then why not cheer yourself up by spending a night in the company of your Football Weekly pals, because we are pals in that. In this case, Barry, John Ashdown, and hey, Greg Bukowski will be joining us at the Epstein Theatre on Thursday, the 12th of May. It's months away, but already there's only a handful of tickets left. You can fit a lot of tickets in a hand, to be fair, but I'm not going to go into that. Anyway, a couple of days before we roll into town, says producer Ben, the Epstein Theatre will be hosting the Mr. Liverpool bodybuilding contest. So that's another option for you if you're in the area and fancy seeing some bodies getting built.
Barry,
anyway,
might as well just go up a couple of days earlier.
Why not? Why not?
Do the double.
All right. It's enough cheap shots, Simon Burton. You can get your tickets for Football Weekly Live in Liverpool, not sadly Mr. Liverpool bodybuilding, at theguardian.com/guardianlive. There's also news about our Dublin gig, but I'm going to come on to that later because I can't wait, frankly, to discuss what happened at Old Trafford on Sunday afternoon before that League Cup final. Man United beating Arsenal 3-2. Now, Thursday evening, we have to go back a bit really here. We have to spool back to Thursday evening when Man United have this must-win game against Midtjylland in the Europa League. They're 2-1 down. Everyone's laughing. Nelson Stahl at Louis van Gaal and his team. And then Martial goes and does his hamstring in the warm-up. Remember, goes, oh, God. And on comes Marcus Rashford. I mean, not even his own family had heard of this fellow at this point. And he comes on, and with his first touch, he scores. He gets a brace. And then he, in the Premier League, Simon, he comes on with it. Well, he starts, first Premier League start, with his first shot. He scores, he gets another one, and he sets up the winner.
Yeah, I saw the
against Petr Cech.
I saw the Michelin game, and he played excellently. I mean, for a debut that was sprung on him at moment's notice, he played excellently. He runs at pace with the ball, direct runs into the penalty area. Regular goal. To be fair, Michelin defended really extraordinarily poorly.
Right, that was the thing. I mean, on Thursday we were going, wow, this is amazing, they win 5-1 or whatever, yeah. But it was Michelin. So.
And particularly their right back against Memphis Depay, who looked, I mean, on last Thursday, he was extraordinary. You know, he was like Garincha's love child with Ronaldo. He was kind of
Did that actually happen?
And it may well have happened.
Garincha had a lot of love children. I don't know if he had one with Ronaldo.
There's some biological issues there and also some kind of time issues. Right. But if it had happened, the result may have looked like Memphis Depay last Thursday.
Okay.
Like really great trickery. He was a gift machine last Thursday. Anyway, roll on to Sunday. And you know, much the same. If you like, rewind back to last Monday when they were facing Shrewsbury and then Michelin. And
is this a flashback in the flashback?
Kind of, yeah.
Like, cool. And does time now run at like quarter speed? Because like in its inception,
I think a bit like Inception is running at various different speeds at the same time. So if you can cope with this, and at Shrewsbury they got past. It wasn't enormously convincing, but. You know, from last Monday, having those two games that they really had to win, and then Arsenal, and you know, a lot of doubts about their levels of performance, about the manager, about the squad. I mean, the difference that a week makes.
You're right.
Also, the difference that having a homegrown player, you know, having a homegrown player playing well, coming in, playing well, scoring goals, provides fans with a kind of focus that. That they don't ordinarily get, that other players that big money signings can't provide in the same way. And it felt as if, and I wasn't physically at either game, but it felt as if that there had been a real kind of galvanising effect from these two performances, and that there is an optimism now that there hasn't been at any other point during Van Gaal's reign.
Right, interesting. I mean, that's now 11 academy players that he's brought to him. They have a really extraordinary production line of talent. I just want to mention here a tweet from Michael Butler, who asks, are you as disappointed at me that none of this morning's headlines deploy the butt develops rash motif? But take you over to the academy.
Very good.
Very nice. Sorry.
There was almost this weird symmetry with the attacks, because of course you had Danny Welbeck starting up front for Arsenal, who was the one who United fans, I think quite a few, were unhappy that he was allowed to leave when he was and the price he was, for exactly that reason you talk about, because people like to have a homegrown player to hang on to and to sort of consider their own. I think that, you know, it was interesting in a way that he was just about Arsenal's most effective player as well on the day, but that United have found someone who managed to, at least for now, you know, I think we need to steady a little bit and not sort of assume that he's going to score us the winning goals at Euro 2016. But I think, you know, it's someone else to get excited about.
Absolutely. So you're saying that Danny Welbeck was more effective than Theo Walcott for us?
Oh, just a smidgen. A smidgen more effective than Theo Walcott. Walcott has been dreadful for a considerable amount of time now. I think he's just been horribly ineffective. I could see why Wenger thought he was going to do, having all that pace up front with him and with Sanchez and Welbeck starting, and then obviously having Ozil behind them. But Walcott just seems to do nothing but run into blind alleys at the moment, and that was actually exactly what happened on the first goal, was he got himself tackled in the middle, running heaven knows where. You know, I think that there's so many players in that Arsenal team who've been ineffective recently. I think Ramsey's going through an absolutely dreadful spell. It's only a 5-point gap. They're still going to go to White Hart Lane, where they could theoretically win. But it's hard to see it happening at the moment. I can't see them getting close to it again. I think they've blown it.
Walcott's stats here. Apparently, no shots, no chances created. In 63 minutes, 6 passes completed. Touched the ball 17 times. Managed to lose possession on 10 occasions. As I think this was in Football 365, 16 conclusions. They point out it would be hard to do worse, even if you were trying to. Arsenal. So everyone with a lot of stinging criticism for Wenger and his boys off there. I mean, they didn't lose 8-2. It was only 3-2, Barry, so is this a bit harsh?
No. Okay. It was an absolutely gutless performance. Totally gutless. They failed. You know, it was like a series of failures, you know. And Arsenal, you know, like Hercules having to clear out the Aegean stables is, you know, this big task in front of them. And, you know, they filled a couple of barrows and then just went, you know what, don't fancy this, put the shovel down and just went out. You know, they got off to a terrible start, got themselves back into the game. And you thought, you know, after half time, you know, even Lee Dixon tweeted, come on, show us what you're made of. And they didn't. Then they...
Would they have received his tweet, though?
No, they didn't. Well, I wouldn't imagine so.
Right.
And then with 20 minutes to go, you know, after making it 3-2, they had a big chance to throw down a marker and, you know, go get a point, get all 3 points. But their efforts were feeble, you know. Did they even muster more than one shot on goal in the last 20 minutes?
It was a terrible ending. And I think Wenger got his last substitution wrong as well, sending on Iwobi. And I get what he was thinking to try and galvanise things and to send on, I guess you get swept up in this idea of the young player who's coming on and doing that for United and matching it. But actually, you wonder if they wouldn't have been better off, not that he's been in great form either recently, but throwing in Joel Campbell, a player who's done something for you all season and maybe could add a little bit more to construction. I think that what you said is actually absolutely bang on. Graham Souness saying it on TV, and I think Souness is prone to this, getting sort of carried away with, if you're not, you know, blood and sweat, you're not trying hard enough. But Arsenal looked just so without conviction that it was just, you know, as Baz says, there were twice they had openings to get back into that game, and neither time did they look like they were ever going to do it.
All right.
And I wanted to point out on Rashford, by the way, turn it back to him. He scored as many goals in two matches as Falcao did in 29 for United.
Brilliant.
I would also say, if you're tired of talking about Arsenal,
yeah,
I mean, they play Tottenham on Saturday.
Yes.
So after next Monday, it may well be that we don't have to talk about them again.
There you go. It's three fronts that they've taken significant hits on. We've got the replay, of course, still to come with Hull in the FA Cup. Things don't look so good in the Champions League and not so much in the Premier League as well. We'll talk about Spurs coming up on Saturday and the midweek round very shortly. But a quick word on Man United before we leave this little section of chat. As you mentioned, that things really turned around the last 7 days. The crowd going home happy now from Old Trafford.
Yeah.
What if they stayed with him? Is that still an option on the table, Van Gaal?
Well, he would need to consolidate on these last two results. He's still got... I mean, there has been many months of disappointment leading up to this point. And have they turned a corner, or have they just had a brief blossoming? Falcao fell over at one point on Sunday, and everyone really liked that for some reason.
I think he fell over
the ground.
Yeah, he did.
It was kind of stunt that Mourinho would do, wouldn't it? Mm.
And he apologised for it afterwards in quite a humble way. And I mean, humility and Falcao don't go together very often. But I think he dealt with that incident well. And I think he also had a point about Alexis Sanchez.
Mm.
So, and his point being that Alexis had just dived to win a free kick.
All right, well, that's enough of that for the moment. Let's take a quick pause and then come back with talk of those midweek games. Squarespace. Hey, I mentioned exciting news about our Dublin gig next month. Basically, to avoid the possibility of riots from ticketless customers, we've been asked by the authorities to move to a bigger venue, Barry. We're going to be at Vicar Street.
Woo.
Oh, really? Is that a woo venue?
Oh, yeah.
What's Vicar Street, then?
Vicar Street opened in the late 90s. I think it's a 1,000-seater.
What?
Probably the best venue of its kind, in certainly in the country, if not Europe. Wow. And beyond, played host to Bob Dylan,
what?
Neil Young, Christy Moore, Al Green, and now it's playing host to Football Weekly.
I wonder who we're warming up for.
Darrow Breen, actually. When he does a tour, he does about 25 or 30 night residencies there on the Irish leg of his tour every 2 years.
Well, we're only there for one night, listeners.
Oh.
But what a night it's going to be. Our move to this, you know, our upscaling of our venue has allowed us to put another 300 tickets on sale. I say that, they're probably already gone. Space time. It took. If they're not, have a look. Ticketmaster.ie. There's a link on the Football Weekly blog. And if you've already bought a ticket already, you're going to be sent a reminder, apparently, about the new location. Now, midweek, Man United host Watford, Simon.
Yeah.
And Arsenal host Swansea. Well, I've got some Arsenal stats here, you know, because I don't want to talk about them. their last 10 games, as I make it, they've only scored goals in four of them, and not inconsequentially, have only won three of them. They have only won three of their last 10 games, Arsenal. Them.
And now they play Swansea.
And now they play Swansea.
Who are facing back-to-back North London fixtures, having lost at Tottenham at the weekend.
Right. Swans did the double over Ars last season, but they did lose 3-0 at the Liberty back in October. That was before Gwydlin turned up. Oxlade-Chamberlain out of the picture. They're saying he may miss the Euros. Mm. Wow. Of course, this is a big game, but it rather pales in comparison to the one coming up on the weekend when they visit Spurs, and as you say, that could be it. That could be it.
Surely it would be it if they were to lose to Tottenham. And looking at their fixtures, their home fixtures appear to be extremely straightforward. They play Swansea, West Brom, Watford, Palace, Norwich, Villa.
All right.
You'd expect them to do pretty well in those, but away from home, they have some testy fixtures. And if they, I mean, they're already 3 points behind Tottenham, but with a goal difference inferior by 11.
Wow. That's like 4 points, isn't it, really?
It's quite similar to 4 points. Mm.
The goal difference is worse than Leicester as well. It's three worse than Leicester. I don't know if you caught this, but I was just saying they don't score goals either, Arsenal.
Yeah.
Which, for a team like Arsenal, that's a big problem. Well, any team, effectively.
They won't be scoring goals against Swansea if Fabianski shows up like he did against Tottenham White Hart Lane.
Very good point. Well, I mean, that was an interesting game, wasn't it? I mean,
he did concede,
didn't he, in the end? But yeah, Spurs had to work at that one.
I foolishly have not brought the number with me, but I think Tottenham have now taken 17 points from losing positions. And this was really... Leicester still lead the way. I'm sure we're going to get to Leicester in a minute. I don't want to do Leicester a disservice, but Tottenham are playing like a team which has the conviction that it's going to win the league. And I think when you're down for that long in a game against a Swansea team who actually, you know, if things are broken differently, not saying they deserved it necessarily, but they could have pinched a second goal before half time. It could have been 2-0. To sort of keep playing as relentlessly as Tottenham did going into that second half, and then 34 shots by the end of the game. You know, once that first goal had gone in, there was just an absolute certainty that the second goal was going to show up as well. And I think that Tottenham are playing very good football at the moment, and they're playing very good football at a time when, you know, aside from Leicester, nobody else is.
That's interesting. And this midweek, do you think this could be the moment when Spurs go ahead of Leicester? Spurs are going to be at West Ham. Leicester face West Brom. Leicester fresh from that late victory against Norwich. Now, What?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, the answer to your question is really going to depend on a couple of things. I think, first of all, what we saw from Norwich against Leicester was a team who played with three in the middle of defence and really just allowed Leicester the space to work in and didn't let them hit on the counter, which is clearly where they've been very effective this season. Another stat I think I saw overnight, Leicester have only had the majority of possession in three of their games
season. This is only the third time they've had more possession than their opponents.
And you see that they're not necessarily, even though they won the game, they're not necessarily as comfortable with that as they are hitting teams on the break. So if
But
they won, exactly. And so I'm not expecting them to lose to West Brom, but I'm just suggesting that perhaps Leicester, who on paper have the easiest run-in of all the teams chasing the title, without question, perhaps if some of these teams see what Norwich did and start to adopt it, then there's something to go from there.
Right.
The other question is, though, just to finish answering your question, because you asked it, West Ham have not lost a home game since August. Both the home games they have lost this season were when they were reduced to 10 men. So it's not an easy game for Tottenham. That is a tough away game.
I was just going to say about, you know, that whole paradigm of sitting deep and not giving Leicester any space in behind to play with them. That which Alex Neil said, I saw what Man United did and they were unlucky not to get a win, so I thought we could do that. I don't know. They're playing West Brom next, and maybe this is the best time to be playing West Brom because they've just rediscovered how to play football, haven't they? They're going with forwards up front, Saïda Berahino. It's free flowing tiki taka from Tony Pulis.
Yeah, West Brom played Crystal Palace at the weekend.
Yes,
and the fans were planning to sing Chris Brunt's name for the entire minute. the 12th minute, the minute that starts after 11 minutes. He's number 11.
Right.
They were planning to sing his name for the entire 12th minute. And then they scored in the 12th minute. And they were too busy jumping up and down and hooraying. And Chris Bunt lost his minute.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he had to go off as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a big win, that, wasn't it? It's 3-2. Quite a dramatic game of football, that. They took a 3-0 lead. Palace came back, yada, yada. I mean, I'm kidding about them not being essentially tight at the back when they visit the King Power Stadium. That's presumably how Pulis is going to approach this one.
And most ones.
And most ones.
Yeah. I was pretty worried about West Brom a couple of weeks ago, but two wins in, you know, in short order have... They're looking fairly safe now.
Mm.
But, yeah, there was a bit of, I mean, yin and yang, I guess, at the weekend. They shot into a 3-0 lead. Berahino, I mean, he's playing again, and we can, and perhaps we can put behind us the whole faff about.
Yeah, nice to see him
being
back
on the bench. He's back. He's playing. Yeah. He's clearly still very able.
Mm.
He's not lost any of his many gifts. But then, you know, to let a demoralised, you know, over a period of a couple of months, demoralised Crystal Palace come so close to getting a draw from that game. You know, so there was encouragement there for West Brom. It looks like they're probably safer in the Premier League.
But there's encouragement there for Leicester as they prepare to face them this Wednesday. So are you saying you think Leicester will get the result and maybe Spurs won't? As you say, it's a tough game there away at West Ham. Their last ever visit to Upton Park, unless they go there for whatever... If it's a supermarket or whatever, they could go. But anyway, they beat West Ham 4-1 when they were at White Hart Lane. What do you think, Barry?
With regard to Leicester, I think I've said it before, but while their running on paper looks relatively straightforward, I don't think it will be that straightforward because a lot of the teams to be playing will be quite happy to settle for a point.
Mm-hmm.
Force Leicester to come at them.
Will they get the win against West Brom?
I would imagine they will, yes. They're a better team than West Brom. And I hope they do win. I'd love if they won the league. So I wish them all the very best. But I still think Spurs are a better team and I think Spurs will win the league. And I think they'll beat West Ham as well.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
But then again, I thought Sunderland would beat West Ham on Saturday and I was proved wrong.
Right.
And I also thought that Theo Walcott would be a very good striker for Arsenal this season and I couldn't have been more wrong on that one. So take everything I say with a huge shovel full of salt.
Right, okay. Hey, forget St. Tottenham's day. Can you see a time in the not too distant future when both West Ham and Spurs finish above Arsenal? Maybe even this season, Paolo Bandini?
I can't personally see it happening this season. I think West Ham's, as well as they're doing, their performances have still been up and down. They weren't actually very good against Sunderland at the weekend. Mm. They won, but they didn't play especially well. We do have to mention Mikel Antonio's celebration, the Homer Simpson impersonation. That was one of the highlights of my weekend, was that that lying on the floor. I don't know how else to describe it, lying on the floor and sort of walking sideways on nothing. Actually, quite a good goal by him as well, by the way. But they, you know, no, I don't think West Ham are about to crack the top four this season. Could it happen in the future? Well, you know,
that nice new stadium they've got.
Yeah, a nice new stadium with accompanying revenues doesn't hurt. You know, I don't think Arsenal are in a period of inexorable decline. I think Arsenal are just in stasis. So I believe that they will, at the moment, they continue to be a top four side, and that's what they've been for quite a long time under Wenger.
I think Arsenal at this time. Every season for the last 5 years have averaged the exact same number of points they have now, which is 51. So they're just being Arsenal.
Mm. Right.
They haven't got worse, they haven't got better. They're just exactly the same.
Mm. Of course, Arsenal may make fools of us all by winning against Swansea and Spurs might come a cropper at West Ham.
Well, I don't think Arsenal would make fools of us all by winning. You know, if they go on to win the league, that doesn't make their performance against Manchester United any less pathetic, you know?
Fair point. On that note, let's just stop for a second and think, and then come back with some considered thoughts on the relegation battle. That's right, listeners, relegation battle, which features six exciting teams. Bournemouth, I'm going to include them there. They're now 5 points clear after their Goalless draw with Watford.
Are you going to leave out Crystal Palace? I was wondering about this.
I was going to slip them in a little bit later on as a kind of maverick twist. But you've ruined that.
Sorry.
Swansea are 3 points above. Norwich are only goal difference above the drop. Newcastle are only goal difference in the bottom three, but they have a game in hand. They're going to be playing, Liverpool. No, Man City. That's against Man City, so that's not easy. Sunderland are minus one from safety, and Villa are no longer relevant by most people's reckoning.
Yeah, I mean, they're no longer relevant. Sunderland got out of a worse position than Villa are in now 2 seasons ago. Mm. I think in the past, is it Oldham?
Yeah, Oldham. 8 points below Crystal Palace with a week to go.
Yeah. So it can be done, but their performances...
Well, you need a lot of games
show
in hand.
No indication whatsoever that they're capable of doing it.
Well, Villa are going to be facing this midweek Everton, who didn't play this weekend, but mind you, neither did Villa by the looks of that result at Stoke. Everton are going to be buoyed by their takeover by this fellow Mashiri. What do you know of him? He used to have 15% of Arsenal. Anyway, he's got 49.9% now of Everton, which is a lot.
Yeah, there's talk of new stadiums and £100 million summer transfer war chests. So we'll see.
So that's a game that you would favour Villa, Everton for. The other matches relating to teams in that kind of happy quartet, happy sextet, are Bournemouth Saints. Don't call this one a derby. You saw Bournemouth, did you?
I
against
did.
Watford?
Yeah.
How do you fancy their chances of getting 3 big points against Saints?
They were fairly bright. I mean, Max Gradle came back. I think if you didn't see the game, it'd be wrong to dismiss it on kind of very superficial evidence as a terribly poor 0-0 draw, when in fact there were enough chances to have made it a terribly poor 2-2 draw. There were good chances missed by both sides. Bournemouth worked hard, pressed well. Gradle came back after, they bought him in the summer. He played 3 games and then did his knee. So he made his comeback. He came on as a substitute in the 20th minute. Junior Stanislas got injured his hamstring. It was quite an interesting moment because he pulled his hamstring when running down the left wing. He was right in front of the bench at the time. And he just stopped running and started limping towards his bench. And his bench said, obviously, if he'd limped off the pitch, they would have had to prepare a substitute who wasn't at all ready to come on while having 10 men on the pitch. So they told him to turn around, limp back onto the pitch a bit and fall over there. So that's what he did.
Oh, right. Anyway, so he won't be of the party come...
Presumably, yeah, Stanislas is out. But yeah, I mean, Gradle had a couple of good chances. One header at the far post that he really should have scored with, but Gomez saved. Gomez made several good stops in this game.
Right.
Whereas Watford generally, genuinely missed their chances. Hmm. You know, they skied them high and slashed them wide. Igalo had a good shot saved after 2 minutes, and that was pretty much the last work that Bournemouth's defence really had to do.
Oh, okay. Anyway, there they are, 5 points clear of the drop. Swansea immediately behind them are going to be at Arsenal, as we mentioned. Norwich then host Chelsea, who've had back-to-back wins for the first time, I think, all season. Certainly the first time they've come from behind to win a game all season, which is quite remarkable. And they're the first team to beat Fraser Forster since he came back from his, 10 months out? He had 708 minutes without conceding, but then Chelsea did for him. So well done, Chelsea.
And well done, Fraser Forster, by the way, because he did take Paul Jones's record before being beaten.
That was... Yeah.
But he was caught very flat-footed for that.
Yeah, it was curious how he conceded when he did concede.
Yeah, it was a soft one to let in. He won't be too pleased with himself. It was his own fault, let's just say.
All right. Anyway, then Newcastle will be at Stoke, which is not an easy game. So I don't know how they're going to do that. And your Sunderland, Barry, are going to be hosting Crystal Palace. Now, this might catch you by surprise, but could Palace actually get dragged into this relegation conversation?
I think so.
They're 8 points clear.
Well, they've won 1 point since the turn of the year. Mm. And despite good wins in the FA Cup, Alan Pardew seems to have no idea how to turn the situation around at Palace. And that's sort of a hallmark of his management that when things are going badly, he isn't able to change them or fix them. And I know one Crystal Palace fan very well, and he's very, very concerned and thinks that the way they're playing at the moment, he rarely misses any of their games. He thinks the way they're playing, that the only thing that will save them from relegation is the fact that there are so many other really bad teams below them.
Well, that would certainly do it, yeah, the teams that are worse than them. They've got forward scoring goals again. Magnificent goal from Colin Wickham.
Yeah, and again, he is a player that tends to score in bursts, so that is a good sign for them.
And very short burst at that.
Yeah, pretty short burst. You know, it was his famous burst that kept Sunderland up
that
time.
That's so true.
Wickham's frustrating. He's a decent player and he works very hard, and a lot of his good work, I think, doesn't get credited because, you know, it's dirty grunt work. But I do think he should be scoring a lot more goals. I think this is a huge game, yeah, actually, for both teams. And if either lost, it would be very worrying for their supporters.
Right, okay.
Sunderland's well against West Ham. I thought they played reasonably well, but just couldn't, you know, they had the chances to at least get a point, if not win the game, but just couldn't score, really toothless.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a tough one to call. I wouldn't know which way to go. Probably a draw.
Really? Okay. Mm.
Doesn't help Sunderland's cause to have YB Kasri attempting Rabonas in the 87th minute and completely missing the football.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well.
When 1-0 down away from home.
Poor old Wabi Kasri.
Yeah.
But when they come off, everyone loves that sort of thing.
Well, there's a time and a place.
Actually, the Rabonas may be the one thing that I'm not sure if there is a time and a place for.
I think the time and a place is when you're 5-0 up and you're just bored. I think it's probably not when you're 1-0 down away from home in a relegation scrap.
Well.
But.
Yeah, I remember David Dunn famously tried it for, was it Birmingham City? And it was, like, just tripped himself up, and he burst out laughing, and Steve Bruce on the sideline found it all very amusing as well. But I don't think Sam Allardyce was chuckling too much on Saturday.
Lamella had one for Tottenham earlier in the season. So
Big Sam actually got a quite a warm reception from West Ham fans. A lot of the build-up to the game was focused on would he get booed and effed and jeffed, and no, he wasn't.
Delightful.
Lamella score a 25-yard Rabona wonder goal in the Europa League last season.
Yeah, it was last season. I was just thinking that. I said this season. I mean last season, yeah.
Right.
That is what I was thinking.
Yeah. But Crystal Palace, I saw them recently at Tottenham. And
the FA Cup game?
They were impressive. Obviously, they won that match. Their defence kind of grew into it and looked fairly sturdy at the end, which it hasn't very much of late. And Yannick Bolasie came off the bench. And, you know, they've been terribly poor in the last couple of months. They proved to us in the first few months of the season that their first team is very much competitive in this division. And they've proved to us in the last few months that without a couple of key players, their first team isn't up to that much.
Right.
But the key players are coming back, and I would expect them to survive comfortably on that basis.
I think the thing with Palace is, you can look down the form guide at the moment, and it looks atrocious because they're the only team in the whole league that hasn't won any of its last 10 games. In fact, they're the only team in the whole league that hasn't won at least twice in its last 10 games. But in the same way as West Brom, we were saying, you know, not long ago, we were thinking, oh, they might be in trouble. They win two games on the bounce, and suddenly they're out of it. Well, West Brom are only 3 points ahead of Palace, so if Palace won even one game on the bounce, you might think they're suddenly not looking too threatened, because they're already 8 points clear of the relegation zone.
Mm. Can you win a game on the bounce?
Yes.
Right. We're going to take another break, apparently, already, because after this, we get all continental.
Hello. And welcome to another day of export opportunity. UK style is admired the world over. South Korea want our fine suit fabrics. Sweden want our classic country clothing. And Switzerland want our dazzling cocktail dresses. Whatever your business, find your opportunity at exportingisgreat.gov.uk.
Bye-bye, White Cliffs of Dover. Hello, strange and wondrous continent of Europe. Where they do things differently, including the way they play their football. I don't mind telling you. In European news this week, FIFA, well-respected and largely charitable organisation, FIFA, the people who run football for you and me, Simon, have replaced the kindly old gentleman who used to kind of keep things in order for them, with another man from his same village, or canton, as I think they call them, Valais. Were you excited by that news? Gianni Infantino.
I would say I could have been more depressed.
Yes. I think that's probably... Yeah, nailed it with that. Okay.
Speaking of nailing things, I think Barney nailed it when he likened Infantino's election to Blofeld's cat being elected new head of Spectre.
Oh, dear. Poor... Well, we'll see. We'll see. In other European news, they had the draw on Friday for the Europa League. Some exciting ties there. The media in England very much preoccupied with the Man United Liverpool clash, but
do you know, can I just check on this? Because I didn't see the draw live, and doesn't Infantino normally take charge of such situations?
Yeah, he didn't do it.
Yeah, someone else did it. It was chaos, balls bouncing all over the stage. Yeah, his glamorous sidekick tripping over her heels
to handle the duties for them. But anyway, yeah, Dortmund Spurs, pow! How about that? Did you know how many goals Dortmund have scored already this season?
I do not.
101. Oof. Wow. Mkhitaryan.
It's all
Aubameyang.
This coming weekend is when it all sorts itself out in Germany, isn't it?
Hey, it's the Klassiker.
Yeah.
8 points. It's kind of already sorted itself out. I mean, but 8 points between big Bayern Munich and who got Uli Hoeneß back out of jail today. He's out.
It's amazing given Bayern's results this season that anyone's still within 8 points of them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
and
true.
Potentially I guess it's within 5 points. Come Saturday now.
Although I wouldn't count on it because last time they played each other 5-1 with do you remember Lewandowski came off the bench and destroyed, I think he scored, was it 4 goals in 13 minutes or something like that? It was something stupid. But anyway, yeah, so they'll probably extend that to 11, although maybe not. And of course you can follow that on Top Sports Channel, that lot, you know. They've got a big day because they start on Saturday, that channel, with Spurs against Arsenal. And then you've got Der Klassiker, don't turn around, etc. And then you've got Sporting against Benfica.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's not worth a
and they've probably got some
costly
stuff
monthly
as well.
Subscription. I don't know what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. And you can see Dortmund Spurs on that, Simon. There you go. There's loads of other... I mean, we'll talk about the Europa League draws when ties come round, which is soon enough. In other European news, since we're enjoying this so much, did you know that Olympiacos have already sewn up the Greek Super League?
I did not know that.
Oh. I think that's a record. PSG could have wrapped it up next weekend in France, i.e. the first weekend in March, they could have wrapped up the Liga title.
They lost a game, didn't they?
They lost a game. It's the first time they've lost in 36 matches domestically. But they went to Lyon, their brand new Stade des Lumières, and they lost 2-1. One of the goals, brilliant strike from Serge Dada. Did you see this? Spanish fellow? I think he's a Spanish under 21. He should be if he's not, you know, assuming he meets the age criteria, because it was a brilliant goal. He kind of, his first touch kind of hooked it over the defender, and his second stuck it past the goalkeeper as well. It was very nice. I mean, without it touching the ground and that kind of thing.
I'm off to Paris this week to meet Marco Verratti. So yeah. Unfortunate timing, really, to have to talk to him in the week that they finally lost a game.
Well, yeah, except that he didn't play in that game, and neither did Angel Di Maria. And yeah, that's possibly significant.
Paris Saint-Germain have a goal difference advantage over the second place team in Ligue 1 of 43.
Yeah. It's a lot of goals. It's a lot of goals. No, I think they'll still make it to the title, also because they're 23 points clear of team
helps.
In second place, Monaco. Yeah, great for Lyon, though, because it brings them back into the conversation for third, which you know, would be nice for them.
It's potentially good for Chelsea if it's the beginning of a, you know, not their best moment of the season. You know, again, Champions League timing. Mm-hmm. If this is the point where they have their wobble and it happens to coincide with critical knockout game, then good for Chelsea.
It's very true. Chelsea fans, make sure you keep abreast of the situation with PSG by following them on that same aforementioned sports channel, where on Sunday night viewers were entertained by the sight of Juve winning again.
They really weren't entertained, were they?
Did you not like that game?
Oh, I thought it was a I mean, look, Juventus are impressive. Juventus are an impressive football team, and there's nothing to take away from them. But I think when you look in the context of Derby d'Italia past, when Inter, even when they haven't necessarily been at their peak, have sometimes managed to produce fantastic performances, results. I think about Stramaccioni winning at Juventus Stadium. It was nothing. Absolutely just extraordinary how far this Inter team have fallen. When you think that they played Juventus at the beginning of the season, they were 8 points ahead of them. They're now 13 points behind them. That's a 21-point swing in 19 games.
That's true. The pre-game was good.
Excellent on that sports channel.
Yeah. The whole choreography and stuff.
The choreography was, you know, it was... You always get, I think, Juventus bring their A game. Juventus fans aren't often the most... colourful with their choreography. I think when you think of the teams that really tend to produce the most dramatic displays, it's, you know, Napoli and Inter and Milan. Juventus tend to go with the classic black and white, you know, all the way around and something simple. But they had a big clown and a jack-in-the-box popping out the title that they believe Inter stole from them in 2006 in the back of the Calciopoli scandal, which... Fun fact, Juventus' goal scorer, Leonardo Bonucci, who, by the way, is...
brilliant goal,
Yeah, I thought such a confident volley for a centre-back.
He's such a great player. Pep Guardiola calling him his favourite player last week, which I think might have been because he just played him in the Champions League. But he is such a tremendous player.
Bonucci has long been undervalued for how much he contributes to Juventus. I mean, you know, everyone likes to see Chiellini because he's... you know, growls and he snarls and he looks tough. But Bonucci is a fantastic ball player. I think Gazzetta had him as playing the most passes in the whole Juventus team in that game. He's a fantastic ball player. He doesn't score that many goals because he's a centre-back, but when he does get forward, he tends to hit them very well.
Yeah, but what he also does, he has those Pirlo-esque balls from the back that he sprays up.
Yes, his range of passing is better than most midfielders. So he's a phenomenal player, but actually what my fun fact I was going to give you, Bonucci made his debut under Mancini in 2006 at Inter. He won his first league title the year that Inter were awarded the title from Juventus. So, in fact, that was his title as well that was being mocked. Although I think he only played one game that season, so a little bit of a tenuous title for him.
Right. Well, anyway, behind him, Gigi Buffon enjoying yet another clean sheet. He has now gone 746 minutes. That's even longer than your pal Fraser Forster without conceding in the league. But he's still short of the all-time Serie A record, which is held by crazy old Seb Rossi, who went 928 minutes back in the heyday of that Milan defence when he had Baresi and Tassotti and Costacurta and etc. Ahead of him. Anyway, so Juve, now they are currently 4 points clear on top. Remember how they started when they were down in 18th? Anyway, they're 4 points clear, but Napoli playing tonight away in Florence. You've got Roma who've moved into third place ahead of that game, ahead of Fiorentina while we wait for Fiorentina-Napoli. And that's really exciting. They've won six games in a row and El Shaarawy is back.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that Juventus have now, you know, as you've alluded to with Buffon's clean sheet record, not conceded a goal in eight games, which makes them sort of hard to catch, this would actually be a quite compelling little four-way race developing at the top, because Napoli, yes, could get back within a point of Juventus if they win tonight. However, if they don't win, Fiorentina win tonight, they then play not an easy game, but away to Roma on Friday. So they've got two games before Juventus next play and could in theory be within 3 points of Juventus themselves by the time Juventus next play. So even Fiorentina are in the title race at the moment. It's definitely going to be a doozy of a race for the top three places. And if Juventus do slip at all, it could get really interesting at the top.
Well, I don't need to tell you where you could see Fiorentina-Napoli and Fiorentina-Roma if you wanted. Barry, while we're here talking about Italy, and I should mention the Coppa Italia semi-finals, which are going to feature Inter Juventus, just like with the League Cup, they're facing each other again. It was 3-0 the first leg, so that's one's pretty much over, but who knows. But the other one's Milan-Alessandria, but that's on the other sports one. That's on the other, not this, that's on the other sports channel. But, you know, fair play. I'm going to mention that for them as well. Belgium.
Barry's Belgian Football Corner.
Exactly. All right.
I'm going to waffle on about Belgian football. Very briefly.
What you did there.
Right. Was that it?
What?
Oh, no, okay.
Oh,
right, yeah.
No, just to say that a gang of about 20 Charlton Athletic fans.
Like a group.
A group.
Yeah.
Of 20 Charlton Athletic fans decided to miss their side's thrilling 4-3 home defeat at the hands of Reading on Saturday to go and watch some football in Belgium instead. They wanted to protest against their owner, Roland du Châtelet, who never goes to the Valley, so they can't protest. So the Muhammad went to the mountain.
Right.
Or was it the mountain went to... Anyway,
yep.
They went to see Saint... And apologies in advance to our Belgian listeners for my appalling pronunciation. I haven't had a chance to ask anyone how to say these things. They went to say St. Truiden, who were owned by, also owned by du Châtelet, among other teams around Europe.
Are they doing similarly badly?
Well, they lost on Saturday 2-1 to Zult Waregem, or Waregem. And these 20 fans went to protest. They wore black and white scarves. They handed out leaflets, which were printed in English and I think Dutch or Flemish, I'm not sure. Mm. And they were ejected from the ground and had their collars sort of felt by the local constabulary. I think they were.
Yeah, I heard they were arrested. Is that right?
They were certainly detained for a while, and the police took down their particulars, if you pardon the expression, and they were eventually all released anyway. But they've managed to drum up loads of publicity, yeah, which I'm sure was their intention, and fair play to them. I think they all paid their own way. You know, they do have a fighting fund. They've set up this organisation called CARD, Coalition Against Roland du Châtelet, so that I think they had some funds to pay for the scarves and the leaflets, but otherwise they went at their own expense. So, you know, fair dues.
Mm, all right. Well, I hope they had a nice day out along with all the protests and stuff. And a very noble cause that is. We're following...
Yeah, well, Charlton's a real mess at the moment. It's a good club and they deserve a lot better. They're anchored to the foot of the Championship and probably going to get relegated.
Right.
Jan Kermagrant, actually, he plays for Reading now. He used to play for Charlton. He scored 2 goals against them on... Saturday didn't celebrate either of them, and he has said that this guy du Châtelet is absolutely deluded and shouldn't be let anywhere near Charlton.
Right. Hmm. Well, anyway, best of luck to them with that card. I hope they have better luck than we have had getting through to Sid Lowe. Because for our grand finale, we're going to have him talking about the Madrid derby and how Atletico beat Real Madrid 1-0. And all that success that Zidane's been having since he took over, it's all gone poof.
It's for naught.
It's for naught, exactly. Because they're miles away now. They're,
does that plank him right back at square one or even further back?
I don't
does
know.
He have groundwork just to get back to square one?
I think the thing is that it's not his fault. It's all Florentino Perez's fault. The fans are now waving hankies in Perez's direction.
Which will displease Florentino Perez no end, and he will obviously need to appoint a scapegoat. So.
They're 12 points behind Barcelona. Atletico Madrid are 8 points behind Barcelona. And, Cristiano Ronaldo, as we hinted at, he's got a scapegoat, and it's the rest of the team. If we were all at my level, maybe we would be leaders, said the 31-year-old, who then clarified that and said, no, I was referring to my level of fitness, not... playing. I'm not better than any.
He's probably fitter than them because of all that furious backpedalling he had to do.
Possibly. I mean, he's super, super fit, isn't he? But anyway, Mr. Chip, who's good for a stat about Spain and Spanish football and that, he pointed out that since Real Madrid's fans put up that famous want ad, you know, that kind of classified ad saying wanted, like a decent opponent for the derby, because this is getting a bit of a joke. That was back in 2011. Since then, Atleti have actually won more derbies than Real Madrid have at the Bernabeu. Wow, have some of that. The other thing I was going to ask Sid about is Gary Neville, who'd had those 4 straight wins. Do you remember how he couldn't get a win? He won 4 in a row. That kind of came to an end this weekend when they got beaten 3-0 at home by Athletic Bilbao. Now people are going, because you know that there's a tremendous revisionism in football. They're going, well, I suppose those 4 wins were against 2 of the worst teams in Spain and Rapid Vienna, as if, you know, those weren't proper challenges. So anyway, next time we dial up Sid, which is going to be Thursday, and fingers crossed for better luck then, we can ask him whether this has put the pressure back on Salford's favourite son.
Do you think there seems to be quite a lot of people out there who really want Gary Neville to fail?
It's true.
And I'm not sure why.
Well,
I'd quite like him to fail purely for selfish reasons, because I miss seeing him on the telly.
Right.
But apart from that, I wish him every success. He's, he's a lovely guy, and, and he's very judicious and hardworking. But I have noticed that an awful lot of people seem to want him to fall on his arse. I don't really understand why.
Well, there is somebody I know who is not, who is very keen, who's kind of perched vulture-like above Valencia's season, waiting for it to all continue to go very badly in the league. And I'm confused as to why, and I've asked many times, and they explain it by saying that they think it's ridiculous that he should walk into a top-level job like that. He hasn't paid his dues, and it's arrogant, and it's as much to punish, I think, the club for this kind of brazen act of appointing a chum off the telly as opposed to actually getting in a proper professional manager, as it is anything to do with Neville's impudence in taking the job, which I think is also mixed in there. I would imagine that that's the reaction for a lot of people. There'll probably also be a big hangover for all that kind of anti-Neville, anti-Man United ABU stuff that has been buried by his excellence on Monday Night Football. All those buried feelings about how they didn't like Gary Neville, they've had to swallow while he was doing a great job as a pundit, and now come roaring back forth. Everyone can really finally exercise all that vile and that bile rather than venom.
But so, I don't think it's arrogant of him to go and presume he can do the job. I think it's quite brave.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see an English manager, you know, having a go abroad.
Exactly. Exactly. Here's to you, Gary. If you're a listener, maybe you are. Do tell Sid that we'd like to speak to him. And, well, that's it then. Paolo, anything you want to add in?
Not that I can think of.
What did you learn today?
What I learned today?
Yeah.
Today I learned about the gut room at the Bacon Factory.
Oh, don't bring that up again. Don't bring that up again, please. Or I'll be bringing something up. Simon, what did you learn today? Not your chicken story, please.
I didn't learn that, no.
No, but did you learn anything, you know, in all this time we've been sat here? Did you take nothing from this?
No, I definitely did. I learned so much great stuff. It would take me approximately an hour and 10 minutes just to list it.
All right, then. Barry, what was the favourite thing that you took from today?
The reaction on Paolo's face when I explained to him what the gut room in a bacon factory is.
Okay. Listeners, I'll leave you with that. Thanks to you for being with us. Thanks to producer Ben for... make it all happen. We'll be back on Thursday. Bye.